Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and this is the second and final part of the life and times of 77-year-old Tony Rice. Born in England in 1929, Tony grew up with an innate desire to have adventures, starting with him collecting and pulling apart incendiary bombs as a young boy during World War II. Having joined the Merchant Navy and surviving two sinkings, he was drafted into the Navy at the end of the war, not a great experience, where twice he ended up in the brig. Returning to the Merchant Navy, he finds himself on a ship arriving in Australia, and this is where we pick up the story. Jumping ship, he goes on the run, but eventually gains papers allowing him to stay. And here, his adventures really take off. He heads for the Northern Territory, hunts crocodiles, rounds up and breaks brumbies without any previous riding experience, is made a totem cousin by the local Warramunja tribe, and has so many more adventures. So, let's tune in and listen to Tony. Which port did you first come into? Was it Sydney or Melbourne when you came?
It was in Sydney first when we come into.
So that was your first visit to Australia. What was your impression? What did you think?
Well, I thought it was a good country.
Right.
When we went over and got the load of phosphate from Nauru Island.
Yeah.
We come back and that was delivered in Newcastle.
Okay.
And that's where I jumped ship.
Oh. Okay.
I jumped ship. I was on the run for about 2 months. Then I gave myself up to the immigration department, and I got papers to say I could stay in the country permanent.
Which is what you wanted, was it?
That's what I wanted, yeah. When I jumped ship, I went to the shipping office and I collected my passport. And they just gave it to me.
Didn't even ask.
Didn't even ask. And so, look, as I say, I was on the run for about 2 months. I was working from job to job, different jobs, like timber mill or something like that.
Because in those days it was really easy to get work, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, in 1949, when you come into this country, you didn't have to give yourself up or anything like that. You were free to settle down. But that was in 49, but in 1950, they brought in the law that you had to give yourself up.
Well, there were no penalties for leaving the Merchant Navy like that?
No, but if I went back to England, my mother tells me, I would have been jailed for a breach of contract.
Oh, okay.
Like for jumping ship.
Yeah.
So, I come down, I come down to Melbourne and I get myself up in the immigration office in Melbourne. I forget where it was now. Oh, this is going back, 50 years ago.
Yeah, it's a long time, that's right.
Yeah. And I got married to a young girl I met in Luna Park.
Her name?
Her name was Gloria.
So tell us how you met.
Well, we were in Luna Park, and I just happened to get on to her, like. And she took a liking to me and took me home.
All right.
And, it was, I suppose, about 4 or 5 weeks, and her mother caught me having sex with her and called the police, and I ended up in jail in Port Melbourne.
Oh. Yeah, some people talk about their lives in terms of the places they visited. You can almost talk in terms of the jails you visited.
And then I went to court, and they asked me if I'd marry her. I said yes.
Can I ask you how old she was?
She was 16.
Okay.
I was 21 at the time.
Oh, gosh. Well, there's not that many years between you. But yes, okay. We've got to remember what life was like back in those days.
That's right, yeah. Yes. Yeah. And then I rejoined the Merchant Navy out here.
Okay.
I rejoined the ship I was on was the Nara Cooper.
Where was your wife living when you were...
Oh, she was living with her family.
She's still... Okay.
Yeah. And when I went away, like, I was on the Nara Cooper, I was away about 4 or 5 maybe a week, and we were only going to islands, different islands, delivering stores and picking up pigs and cattle on board. The last trip I done on her, I come home and I caught her in bed with my best mate. I packed my bags, done him over, put him in hospital and went back to the ship.
Yeah.
And then I was only on her about another week, I think, and I got discharged, or I discharged myself.
Yeah.
And that's when I went up to the Northern Territory.
That was a big change of lifestyle, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I did like to travel and that, you know.
Yes, oh, that's obvious, yes, yeah. Yes.
And, well, most of my time in Australia, in the early days here, I used to go from job to job, last about 3 months, and then travel on again. So as I could see the country.
Yeah, yeah. When you first went up to the Northern Territory, what was it like? What were your impressions?
Well, my impression, I liked the bush. I liked the outback, you know, the open spaces. When I went up there, when I left Melbourne, I got on a train and got to Alice Springs. And I got a lift from Alice Springs with a young bloke to Katherine.
Mm-hmm.
And he got me a job there. We were dismantling the slaughter yards.
Okay.
So we were there. This is where I met my mate. I won't mention his name or anything because we had bad discussions later on. I met him there and we finished what it took us about 3 weeks, I think, to dismantle all the machinery and send it to Darwin.
Was that hard work?
It was hard work, yes. Hmm. And when we finished that job, well, we went up north and we bought 4 horses and 2 saddles and 2 pack saddles. Pack saddles. And we decided to, you know, go out and see what the crocodile shooting was like. We had our own 303 rifles, plenty of ammunition. So we went out to the, on the borders of Arnhem Land, on the East Alligator River.
Oh, okay.
Was the one we went out on. And we shot quite a few crocodiles, you know, and sold the skins to the Chinese bloke in Pine Creek. He had a big store there. Jimmy R. Toy was his name, yeah. And we just decided to get some more horses, so we rounded up a few Brumbies and broke them in. And we bought a few more pack saddles.
Who taught you to ride?
Huh?
Who taught you to ride and break horses in?
Nobody.
You just picked it up?
Just got into it, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah.
And we've done the crocodile and buffalo shooting just over 5 years. That was in 57, 58, I think it was. Yeah, 58. We gave it up. We had plenty of money. My mate, on the last trip, my mate took the skins over to Brisbane from the Northern Territory by horse. It took him a fair while to get over there.
That's a big journey, yeah.
He never come back for 18 months.
Ah.
And in that time, I'd joined up with this Aborigine tribe, the Warramunga tribe, and they made me totem cousin.
That was an honour.
There's only three men that was ever made totem cousin to any Aborigine tribe, and I was one of them.
You must have touched them in some way for them to have done this. You obviously just didn't wander in and wander out, and that happened to you. But what happened that they gave you such an honour?
Well, I was wandering around the scrub there, you know, and I met a couple of them. They were hostile, and they took me into their camp. And there, they got the headman out, and he could talk a bit of pidgin English. So we talked, and he said, "You live here with us." I said, "Right." I said, "When my friend comes back," I said, "then I have to leave." He said, "Right." He said, "I'll make you totem cousin," just like that.
Gosh.
And they taught me how to use a spear and a boomerang, Oh, they never had the comeback boomerang in that tribe.
Right.
Only what they call a kill stick.
Yes, yes.
So they taught me how to use that. And plus, I had my own, you know, rifle and ammunition. At one part of our shooting, we went down to Mataranka. That's halfway down the Stewart Highway from Darwin. And we were having a drink in the hotel there, and one bloke mentioned a US Army dump about 3 miles out into the bush. So me and Roy decided to go out and have a look at it. Went out there, and we could see the depression in the ground. And the bloke said, "You've got to be careful," he said, "on each corner," he said, "the Yankees planted a landmine." So that didn't worry us. We started digging in the middle of the depression, and we come up with Boyd's anti-tank rifles and ammunition, all still in the grease. 303 rifle barrels, 303 tins of 303 ammunition.
Now that'd be worth more valuable than the anti-tank stuff, because the 303s, you were using them out in the bush,
weren't
you?
That's right, yeah. Oh, the Yankees more or less loaned it to the Australians, and it wasn't to be returned.
Right.
So it was dumped out in the bush. It was all trucks, cars, tanks, and bring gun carriers. They were all taken apart, the engines and that taken out of them, and left all around there.
Goodness me.
The Japs ended up getting all the scrap metal there.
Yeah, isn't that funny, isn't it? You often wonder who won the war.
But as I was saying, when we left the crocodile shooting and that, we just wandered around the Northern Territory. We went to, we worked in Rum Jungle. That was the uranium mine. It was only a shaft then.
Right.
And I was a hoist driver on the shaft. We spent about 12 months there, and we left there and went down to Pine Creek and went out to a gold mine out there. We still had all our horses and that. And out at the gold mine there, they were just building a telephone line through to Pine Creek. It was 30 miles out of Pine Creek.
Right.
So we got the contract of building the power, phone lines. It was only a single wire. That took us about 4 weeks. We'd cut the trees, you know, living trees, just cut all the branches and everything off them.
And string for
and
those.
And just put the wire through on that.
Okay. Because I was going to say, that would have been very quick if you'd had to have gotten poles and
dug
them in.
And, yeah.
Okay, that was very clever, actually.
Yeah. We had the insulators and the T part, or L part, they just screw them into the trunk. And after that, well, we went into Catherine, and we stayed there for a while. I was a driver on the garbage truck there. That lasted for about 12 months, I think. Yeah, about 12 months. Oh, before that, I come into Catherine with some of the tribe. We used to get the Aborigines to do our skinning.
Yep.
Crocodile and buffalo skins. I got to like the Aborigines. They were a very friendly race once you got to know them. But the Warramunga tribe itself, they were a very warlike tribe.
Right.
But like, if you make a friend with them, you got a friend for life.
Friend for life, yes.
Listen to Older Voices, Living History on Ageless Radio.
So from there, what happened from there? That was the end of the Northern Territory for me. We packed it up. I bought a car then. Well, me and my mate bought a car, and we headed through to Queensland. And that's where me and him had a big fight, and they toured it one day in the hotel we were staying in. We were working in the hotel at a little place called Hamilton, and we were working on the dog fence across. Australia.
Yes.
We had to travel 40 miles every day in to the local job. We'd done that for quite a while, and then when we went back into the hotel, that's when I had the fight with him, and we just broke up. I told him he could take the rifle and I'd take the car. He said, yeah, fair enough. So then I went from job to job on the sheep stations, shearing and that.
What was life like doing that? What was that like, working on... Because, I mean, as a boy growing up in Australia, I heard about these things, but of course never experienced them.
Mm.
What sort of life was it working on the sheep stations?
Well, it was all right living on a station. You weren't tied down. You could go into the nearest town like of a weekend. On some of the stations you couldn't. But this was in the time of the shearing strike.
Oh, okay.
When the shearers were burning one another's shearing sheds down.
Yes, yes.
That was in 1959-60, I think.
It was around the end of the decade.
Around
anyway,
about 1960, yeah. I think, the strike was on.
Yeah. Did you ever get him caught up in any of that?
Not really, no.
Yeah.
We used to keep on doing the shearing, though. I was only shearer's mate, you know, getting the skins or the fleeces and throwing them out. And after the shearing was finished, I stayed on Rutherglen Station for quite a while. And then from there, went down to Sydney again. I got a few jobs around the city and headed back down to Melbourne and ended up here in Hillsville. I was living with a woman in Melbourne for a while. That's when I joined the SEC. After I'd done my training with the SEC, we had 7 weeks training that, and they put me on a roving gang.
Right.
We go from place to place,
yes.
You know,
yes.
Doing repairs and all that sort
yes.
of thing. And I started off at Mildura. We were there for quite a while, and then we went down to Castlemaine, Mornington, and then I got a transfer from the SEC up to Darwin. I was only C-grade linesman then.
Yes.
And the SEC transferred me to Darwin on relief. They paid both ways. I was only to go up there for a 7 week contract. So I went up there, and that's when I was only there, I think it was about a fortnight. And they made me leading hand linesman, A grade.
That was a bit of a...
They just took me up
that
like
was
that.
A big jump, yes.
You know, I was pretty smart on the power lines,
yes,
you know.
Yes.
And that's when we used to go to down to the river Snid and do a lot of fishing, you know, over a weekend. And we went down to the Daly River one day. That was about 40, 50 miles from Darwin. And we went out fishing on the river there, on the Daly. And we were only there, it was about 12 of us, I think it was. We got plenty of grog to take with us, you know, a carton of grog each.
Yes.
And we were only there a couple of days, and this Aborigine, not a full tribe, only about 12 of them come into our camp. And lo and behold, they were part of the Warramunga tribe.
Ah.
So we shared some of the grog with them then.
Right.
We weren't allowed to, but we did.
Of course.
And they went out and they got us the bait for the fishing. They used to get prawns about that long. Beautiful. And we used to catch some beautiful fish here, barramundi.
Mm.
A lot we used to lose too. We had a lot of crocodile and shark in the river.
Ah, no, I know about the crocs in Daly.
Yeah,
but I didn't realize
shark,
had sharks.
Shark in the river too, yeah. And sometimes you pull it in and you think you got the fish on it, and you only got the head. But we were there for about a week, and then we had to go back to the job.
Right.
From Darwin, that's when I come back down south. And I ended up in Hillsville. I was with this woman then, she had the three kids. I got a job at the sheriff's in Elmo Road. They were making sewing machine cases. So that job finished, his contract ran out, and then I got a job at the end of St. Leonard's Road here. Contractor there was building towers, big TV towers for Queensland. And I was on their lead moulding for quite a while. And that contract finished, so I went on the council. And the job I got on the council was sanitary, on the sanitary truck. There was a lot of, sanitary pans around here.
Yes, of course, those days, that's right.
So, my mate, he was a bit of a character, the driver on the truck. I used to carry two, one on the shoulder and one in the hand. And they reckon there was a quarter of a hundredweight in each one.
You must have been a very fit man from all this.
Oh, I was. Adventures. I was very fit.
Yes.
A lot fitter than I am now, I'll tell you. The driver, he used to go around, like most of them were at the back of the toilet. He had a panel he just lift up.
Yeah.
And if there was anybody on the toilet, he had a feather in his hat, he'd tickle them on the bum. Every now and again, you hear a scream. I can't even think of his name now. He'd be dead now anyway.
There must have been... Yeah, I can imagine. There'd be doing a lot of surprised people.
And then we carry on a bit further, and we used to do Yarra Glen, Marysville, all up through to Marysville, and all around Hillsville. And one day I was going down to Yarra Glen there, getting one there. If there was any dogs that annoyed you, like, all you had to do was leave a note.
Right.
So this place, I'd left at least three notes there, yep, telling them to tie their dog up at night.
Yeah.
It was only a small dog. So he come out at me this morning, like we used to start about half past 4 or 5 o'clock. He come out at me this morning and got onto my heel. So I just tipped the pail back on it. He went away screaming, and they sent a note into the council. And the engineer called me over the hall. He said, what happened here? Huh. I told him, I said, I'd left them three notes. I said, and they took no notice.
Yeah.
I said, when the dog grabbed me by the heel, I said, I lost control.
Lost control, yeah.
I said, it just fell off my shoulder.
Yeah, fair enough.
He said, right. He said, you're in the right.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if you weren't, you were.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Right. No, got what it deserved.
And when we went around there again, the dog was never loose.
Yeah.
So then, I think the council was the last job I had here, and then I went north again.
Gosh.
I bought a block of land up in Urbanville, in northern New South Wales. And I was with this woman and the three kids. And I was working in timber mills and that there until I come back down here, in 92. And I was retired then. Since I've been back here, I've had nothing but troubles.
Nothing but troubles?
I've had cancer in the stomach.
Oh.
I had 8 inches of the intestines taken out on that.
Gosh.
I had a triple bypass in 1970. I've got a metal valve in the heart. Now I've got 4 hernias. They won't operate on them because I've got asthma and emphysema.
Right.
I've got to get a hip operation. That's coming up on the 29th of this month. And I've got to get my knee done and my shoulder. That's, I'd say, it's all from, my early days.
I was going to say, this all sounds like part of the lifestyle you were living.
Yeah, that's right, when I was younger.
Yes.
I'd say from when I was, in the early days, we used to do a hell of a lot of riding. We used to do droving and that as well. And I'm blaming it on that.
It was tough on the body. Yeah. But, Tony, for all of that, We all wish that we could go through our lives without any damage to our body. Of course we do. But you have lived the most remarkable life. In some ways, it's very much like, as young boys, what we used to read about.
Mm.
You know, it's like you've had one huge adventure.
Well, it was. When I was roaming around the southern parts of Australia and that, I only lasted about 3 months, getting enough money in my pocket and travelling on again. And that's how I've seen the country.
Yeah.
But you'd have no hope of doing that now, that's for sure.
Well, Tony, our time's actually almost up, and I think it's probably a good place to wrap it up, because where can you go after a story like that? It's most brilliant life.
Well, I've been in, since I retired, I've been in Healesville all the time, you know. In the last few years, I've never been out of Healesville.
That must be a little bit difficult, given that you've been a traveller all your life. Is it hard to settle down?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yes.
But I'm with the RSL now. I've been with the RSL since 1993, 94, I think it is. And now I've been on the committee most of the time. My job with the RSL now is memorial custodian and memorabilia custodian.
What does that involve?
Memorial custodian involves checking on the memorials around the Hillsville.
Oh, okay, very important.
And the memorabilia, that's all the photos and all that in the RSL itself.
Right.
All them sort of things.
Yes.
So that's about the end of the line.
Well, but what a line, Tony. I mean, as I said, you know, some people do the same thing 1,000 times. You've done 1,000 different things.
Yeah.
And that's a very rich life.
Yeah.
And can I thank you for sharing it with us?
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Uniting Victoria Tasmania. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.